Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This is truly an epic event that is raising awareness and revealing just how much is happening in the world of embodiment. And this gives me hope about where we're heading as a people. I'm Amara Pagano. I'm the founder of Azul, a conscious movement path of personal transformation. I work with the body and the power of movement to awaken love and consciousness. Embodiment is a key to my work. And the journey of embodying the map of Azul is what facilitates the process of self-realization. I'm excited to sponsor the Dance and Creativity Channel to share my love of movement and to celebrate the power that it has to serve our collective evolution. If you are interested in awakening your deepest potential or curious about the spiritual and healing aspects of embodiment, I encourage you to check out Azul. Everyone is welcome. I work with people who love movement and people who have never moved. Follow the link and you'll find three gifts for you: a 50-minute Azul journey, a special discount on our online embodiment training, and a free month in our upcoming membership program. So come, check out the Path of Azul. I'll be presenting on the main stage here and in the Dance and Creativity channel, and I hope to see you there. For now, enjoy the richness of the presentation you're about to see.
Thank you. Honored to be here. Thank you for those who have stepped into the room with us, and also to those who are watching from the, I guess, digital foyer, those who watch the replay. It's a special time to step in and talk about endurance art. I think that this particular art form or approach to performance art, social animation, rites of passage is really relevant at the moment. Because we find ourselves in a place where, I guess, the stability of society, stability of our internal ecosystems are sometimes really thrown into chaos or being disoriented because so many of the usual particles that we guide by are in motion. And so I think endurance art cultivates a certain capacity to move through the mystery, to continually return to the present. And hopefully to be able to reframe whatever's happening on the scale between pain and pleasure as simply a signal and to approach it with interest. I think that's a key aspect of being an endurance artist, a performance artist, someone who goes on these experiential, durational pieces. It's irrevocably and intimately and innately a spiritual practice too, regardless of what you conceive of to be a spiritual practice. It's deeply human. It involves your heart, your mind, all of your belief systems get called into question. It engages your fight and flight, you know, your sympathetic nervous system. It's quite a holistic practice. It reminds me of being a monk or a warrior. You know, these kind of archetypes come into play. So it feels pertinent and appropriate to be talking about this here in 2020. And it's also very unique. I mean, I'd love, you know, if there's any suggestions or curiosity about how to apply endurance art to your particular art form, you know, I welcome that, whether it be in the chat now or to contact me through openworldtheatre.com to have an ongoing discussion, because I know it's such a unique and personal process. I couldn't possibly answer all the questions or be completely universally relevant. But I'll do my best to give you some tools today, to take you through some practical exercises, some threshold release techniques, as I call them, and talk about my experience with experience design, game design, questing, elemental immersion, all these kind of things which comprise my color palette as an endurance artist. So taking time now, whether you are in real time with me or watching a recording, to frame your current environment as some kind of dojo, some kind of sacred space, some kind of laboratory. It doesn't matter the physical environment, but just feeling into the energetics of the actual space, knowing that beneath the architecture is the land, and this land that we're on could have been used as a graveyard, as a playground, as a church, as a battleground, who knows what it was. And just trying to still ourselves into the respect for the ancestors of the land itself, and feeling the very brittle nature of the arbitrary societal overlay, which comes over the cultural lifeblood of that wherever you are can be turned into an extremely potent sacred space through your intention alone, because the actuality is that it has probably been used and infused with those kind of true energies throughout time. So allowing yourself to breathe, allowing yourself to feel a softness at the back of your head, feeling that brain jellyfish dripping its synaptic nerves down your back, softening in trust, at least to your own body, your own wildlife. Coming down into your hips, feeling a soft grounding into the body through your limbs, through your root, down to your feet, soles of your feet, palms of your hands. And still the mind and come into the senses and feel into what you have reverence for. Is your reverence for your family? Is it for a spiritual entity? Is it for a lineage? Maybe being an artist or being a dancer or being a healer, whatever it is. And I'd like you to bring that reverence into the session. Allow that nervous system to start to be charged with your breath. Start to activate your core, bringing your belly button in towards your spine on the exhale. Squeeze yourself like you're juicing a ripe fruit. Allow yourself to be a bit weird, be taken by your instinct. Banishing the conservative mediocrity of acceptability that might be here in the current space, your usual filter and interpretation of where you are, and just turn it into your dojo, your training area. Committing that in the next 15 minutes, we are going to attempt to expand our energy and our presence just even an inch beyond our body, just an inch beyond our usual conservative cookie cutter framework of what is usual acceptable. Knowing that when we superwire ourselves into the collective energy, we just get a glimpse or a taste or a breath of Maslow's hierarchy of needs right at the top there. Self-transcendence, you know, not just self-actualization, not just being your best self, not just unlocking your potential, but moving beyond yourself. Move beyond your body, move beyond your personal protection, move beyond your guard. Allow your breath to come now up into your heart. Make this meaningful, not because of me, not because of my words, but because you know that you can open up a window, whether it be because there's an emergency outside, someone lifts a gun, a baby is born, you're about to die, you know, these external things can invite you in to this expanded self, but you can also choose when something is going to be meaningful enough. This right here, this session could be a fork in the road, could be an opening, could be a time when you go, you know what? I have not been living in integrity. I'm going to come in and go through the endurance process of making a what I call a big bang decision and sticking with it again and again and again. And that is the endurance. When I talk about endurance art, it can be in one great grand swoop. It could be from a transcendent state, a really brave, activated state. When you feel into your heart and you feel that wilderness and you feel that true, unblinking presence, like a predator in the bush looking at the prey, and you're not worried about yourself. You're just taking in the stark reality of now. And all of the obscuring of your avoidance is gone. And suddenly it's simple and it's clear. And you don't beat yourself up for dodging and ducking and weaving and avoiding. You just go, you know what? I can show up now fully. So hopefully you can interpret the session in that way. Coming up to your face, getting your hands, rubbing them together. Rubbing your face and softening any of the artificial masks you've been imposing on yourself. Letting yourself be ugly for a bit. Squishing the tension in your jaw, bleeding it down, massaging your scalp, pulling your hair a bit, doing a bit of fire breath if you want. The belly, breathing in and out through the nose, bringing the belly button in towards the spine on the exhale. And softening everything else. This is a key part of true, wild, open, spontaneous performance for me, is this idea of having a point of activation, like it could be your belly. And you allow it to pulse and be potent and activated, but try to have the rest of your body be really soft and open so it's a channel for that just to come through. So that a voice can come from your belly and it doesn't get stuck in your throat, or a voice could come from your heart. And you don't let your face clamping around that because through embarrassment. I often like doing twists or rolls. So in your daily practice, I'd really recommend you come into an intuitive yoga. I call it play chi, using this concept of qigong or prana or kundalini, you know, however you like to think of the click, the zap, the liquid lightning in the body of sensation, and just play with it, move it, get to know yourself, go into some silly holding. It doesn't have to be something that is particularly well-formed or structured, but just come into a space where you're just going to release and come into this instinct, into this gentle, gentle observation of yourself and what truly feels like a playground for your authenticity. So taking one deep breath now in, into the belly, then into the heart, then into your wings, then releasing with a sigh, shaking the shoulders, shaking the hips, stamping your feet, raising the shoulders, dropping them. Wonderful. And here we are. Hopefully warmed up, hopefully activated. So the reason I love endurance art is because it becomes a rite of passage, because there is some form of endurance, some form of pressure coming back against you, trying to stop you, saying no, give up. And the process of creating art itself is a core part of the artwork. It could be a durational piece, 24-hour performance. It could be a quantity. You need to keep going until you get some sort of score. It could be simply time, just hold on for long enough. I really like the idea of outcomes as well in your endurance artwork. Like, I'm going to keep going until something comes about, because it talks about the interplay and talks about my process is actually going to invoke something. And it's scary, you know, will I fail? Will nothing happen? But just being determined to keep going until something does result, I think it's a huge life lesson that can really come into play. But when we look at endurance art, I think there's this big bang approach, and then there's what I call like little plop approach. So the big bang approach could be something like, that's it. From this moment, I am not going to eat meat anymore, or I'm going to change my name, or, you know, I'm going to punch a hole in the wall. And so it's a grand gesture. And then the enduring part is simply not doing anything after that. So it's like, well, tomorrow I'm not going to eat sugar. Next, I'm not going to eat sugar, or not going to eat meat, or whatever it is, or the hole in the wall, I'm not going to patch it up. I'm not going to change my name back. So you don't undo the grand slam of the Big Bang. And that in itself can be an endurance form of artwork. You just allow it to ripple out, ripple out, ripple out. But that can take some abstinence or some discipline, like fasting. You know, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. So it's refraining from doing something. The little plop approach is just something that can be incrementally added to each day. So it could be, you know, this concept of Kaizen, which is this Japanese discipline approach to just for 1 minute each day at the same time, you show up and you do this simple activity, which starts to bring self-trust, because you say you are going to do something and then you do it. And the beautiful aspect of this, and I do think that endurance art really plays with reality and authorship being a source of our reality, when you start to realize that even though there are many particles at play, many people reaching out, interacting with us, having demands, obligations, you don't have to just live at the behest of others. You don't just have to always live in response. You can actually set the parameters of what you're going to do. Tomorrow I'm going to do this. And you actually show up at that time. It's like, wow, despite all the chaos of life, I could still land in this particular moment and have this thing happen. So that's the, I guess, this little plop approach is continuing to come back again and again and again. And this can be done to sprinkle throughout your life. But in the sense of an endurance artwork, this is something you're probably going to do continually throughout the performance art piece. So I've actually got a performance art piece coming up. I'm really excited. I've got a 24-hour performance coming up next week. So not this Monday, but next Monday, the 26th, I believe. I'm going to be in a public space here in Auckland with Matthew Tehiki. He's an artist and a friend here based in Aotearoa in New Zealand. And we're going to be stepping forward for 24 hours in a public space. The piece itself is called The Chief Kneels. And we are kneeling in tribute to and in honor of women in particular around the concept of domestic violence and having men in particular cultivate the capacity to hold anger, arousal, frustration, confusion, any kind of emotions, so that it doesn't result in domestic violence. Now, of course, there's many different types of relationships. You might not be a male-bodied person, but be in a relationship with a female body person, etc. But if we look at the key pain point in society, in the patriarchal kind of system that we are now trying to heal, it's really around a heterosexual couple, male and female, and the male is the perpetrator of this domestic violence. So I know there's lots of color and lots of variation, but the key voice that we are bringing is for men to come and train with us to stand into this 24-hour performance and go through this process of feeling what it's like to hold, I guess, if you look at, you know, Shiva Shakti duality, to hold the presence for your own Shakti, for your own dance, for the lifeblood, for this zap, for this creative force, the emotional force, the fluidity, the spontaneity that might be in the moment. But can we hold a stillness and be the observer? Because, of course, a relationship is an extremely activating container. So this, is, I guess, is just an example of endurance art. And I really see that endurance art is a beautiful way. It's a tribute to a concept. It's saying that this idea is so important that I'm willing to go through this duress. It's a rites of passage. It's earning our way. If you look at Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, I would place it around the road of trials. So for those familiar with the work, I won't go into huge detail, but just to summarize, we get this call to adventure. We know there's some cool task we want to undertake, some beautiful artwork we want to create. There's many refusals to the calls, reasons, excuses not to do it. But when we finally get the supernatural aid, you know, this assistant who helps us step over into the belly of the whale, into this vehicle or vessel, which is going to transport us away from our usual world into this adventure, into this ritual, rites of passage, we then end up in the road of trials. And we are tested, and we have to earn our stripes, and we have opposition, and we have all these experiences, which can, yeah, churn us in many ways and ultimately lead us to love and power. That's the goddess and the father and, yeah, many things along the way. But I think that's where the road of, that's where the endurance art is really situated. So it is quite a lot of duress pushing you back. And every time you commit to it, every time you recreate the artwork, because it is a continual creation. If you're doing this little plop effect, you do it again. And next moment, you do it again. Next moment, you do it again. Each one is an act of love and devotion. So the way that we're going to be doing this, the Chief Kneels process, is we're going to be in a public space for 24 hours. And every hour, we're going to alternate our modality or our form of expression. The first will be through sound. The next will be through movement. The next hour will be through word. And the next hour will be through silence. And in that silence, you might like to pray, meditate, reflect, just be, whatever you want to do. Thanks for those comments coming through. Feeling you with me. And I think that hopefully what this artwork is going to do is it's going to at least show women, girlfriends, wives, people who are in the situation, they might not be in a directly violent, physically abusive relationship, but there might be a sense that men are not quite doing the same amount of work that women are doing. And once again, I know this is a dualistic approach to gender, but if we look at all the sister circles that are happening, all the womb work that's happening, all the blood love that's happening, all of the dakinis coming forward, all the, you know, all of these erotic embodiments, all of the emotional clearing, all of this is happening. In my experience, by far, there are far more women showing up to sister circles and doing the work, having these covens, having this, you know, reactivation than men. And so I could imagine it would be quite disheartening thinking like, we're doing so much work, can you meet us? So that's a key intention behind the Chief Kneels, is to have a public display of humanity, to show we are, you know, Matthew and I are showing up, and I also welcome any other men who want to join us, or any other people who love women and want to display their the work they're doing, to be able to hold themselves so that they can be a better partner, lover, and create a home that is truly a sanctuary and a place of safety. I welcome you to join us. The intention is to do it in Aotearoa Square. Haven't had that locked in and confirmed, but we'll be in a public space. And if you're elsewhere in the world and you'd like to join in that same week, or ideally the same 24 hours, but you know, if you'd like to step forward in any way and do use the hashtag the Chief Kneels, or if you'd like to reach out to me beforehand and say, how can I prepare? Please let me know. But I'll talk a bit about that now. So a key thing when you're approaching a durational art piece is to have a really strong intention. Trust your heart as to why you are doing it. Attribute the why or the purpose to something you have a lot of reverence for, that's beyond yourself. And then as you get to the threshold of beginning, let go control. Trust that your intention and your preparation and the way we live, I really think that our artwork is cultivated through our daily life. So ideally you're living a life which is curious, you're opening your senses, giving yourself a massage, you're doing breath work, you're getting in nature enough, you're taking off your shoes, you know, all these kind of embodied ways of living enable you to have an intrinsic wisdom, a sense of what's in flow, a sense of when you're being authentic, an attunement to the moment. These things are also important during the performance. And trusting that if you're living that way, and if you set a really clear intention in approaching this artwork, at that moment when you step in, it's time to turn the thinking mind off. Think that knowing and thinking are two distinct processes. Thinking for me is more mechanics involved, time involved, comparison involved, whereas the knowing is holistic and immediate and sensory and love-based and just feels quite transcendental in its calmness and its simplicity. And so when I step into the space, I do a quick little check. I walk into the space and I connect with the physical space first, because our mind can be very busy when we're about to do our art piece. We might be remembering a script, or we might be thinking about, I hope this is successful, or, oh my God, I've still got 20, whatever it is, blah, 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 all the white noise. So the first thing I do when I come into the performance space is I connect with the space physically, you know, maybe touch the wall, smell the floor, you know, listen to the sky, whatever it is, just like open up, connect. That's the first thing. That's where I am. I orient myself here. Second thing is I connect who I'm performing with. Could be an audience member. It could be part of the ensemble, whatever it is. Just regardless of identity, regardless of what we're about to do together, regardless of I'm the performer, you're the audience, that's all the significance. That's part of the purpose. Let's just connect as dots of consciousness. Like, hi. All right, we're here. Hi, we're here. Cool. Synchronized. Then the third step for me is why I'm there. Then I tune back in to, oh, cool. So this particular meeting is about this performance I'm about to do. Cool. And I orient and then I go from there. But that simple three-step process really helps me. So it's place, people, and then purpose. I would always encourage you, and this is a real key part of Open World Theatre, which is the theatre company that I run, which really has comprised mainly of workshops for a number of years and social experiments, and often it's just me running things. But the modality, I guess you could say, of Open World encourages realness through experience over performance. If you have a performance scheduled, if you have a script written, if you have a score on the soundtrack, if you have any kind of cues and lighting things, I would always desires in a second if the experience is going a different direction. And that for me is a key part of endurance art. Like, how can you keep going with improvisation work? Like, how can you keep freestyling for, you know, 24 hours? How can you do this and go and go and go? It's because every new moment seeds the new inspiration, and you might have to pivot. You might have to change. When we do the safe route, I think it's actually a lot more dangerous. Because if you chose to drive and pre-plan your route before you're on the road and disregard the cars in the way or the rain that was coming through or the anything like that, that would be ridiculous. It's like, well, you can't pre-plan the drive. You've got to be present. If a dog runs, you slow down. You can't know that beforehand. So similarly with theater, don't be orthodox in the way of sticking exactly to your script. Because I believe that regardless of the genius and the premeditated recipe, the actual essence is in the live interaction of the consciousness points. And I think, I often say, I've only ever written one poem. I've only ever done one performance. It's actually always the same essence through different costumes and words and scenarios. But honoring that essence, and I guess you have to find out what it is for you, but honoring that essence is the way that the artwork feels alive. It feels relevant. It feels respectful to the receiver because they're actually there as a part of it. And it's the way that you can actually honor the genius and the eloquence of authenticity. Because there's something subtle about when you, and I often see this in comedy in particular, if someone comments on something that just happens in the moment, there's this gentle aliveness that just peaks beyond the script. And that is the catching the soul behind the artwork, the ghost in the machine. And that is the titillation. And that is the moment of remembering. That is the home space. And I guess my essence for my work is simply that, like, hey, we're here. I want to try and rip off the masks and allow myself to be the crash test dummy. I think that's a role of the sacred clown. We are the first to make the mistake. We are the one who will look foolish. We are the ones who are the first to dance on the dance floor. That's our role, you know. I volunteer as tribute. I will get up and I will do this. So please orient to your essence in every moment. And that is the way I think that your endurance art can keep going on and on and on and on and on. Because you're not just trying to stick to something you pre-established, but you're tuning to the moment again and again and again. We as artists, I think, are very aware of beingness, of identity, of personality. I myself have changed my name several times. My name, Atlas, is not my birth name, and it's also not my legal name. So my legal name currently is Bravo, and I was born a different name to that. So I've had this personal evolution of identity. And in many ways, I don't think a name is that important at all. It's just a plaything. But in some ways, it's very influential because we are called something. We are called out. Every time someone says my name, they invoke or they summon that aspect of me. So be aware of your beingness, both when you are creating the artwork, but most importantly, when you're in the art itself. And I think that really shifts your experience of the signals that are coming into your body at the time of performance. If you think of yourself just as an artist, I'm creating something of beauty. If it gets cold or hot or loud or you get sleepy, I don't know, is the artwork worth it? And is it just really unpleasant? And do you have a hell of a time throughout the whole thing and you just sort of bear and hold on through your tenacious will? Or do you think of yourself as a warrior, as a monk, as, you know, you fill in the space. But if your beingness, if your character that you're playing aligns to pride, to service, to love, when you endure this artwork, I think you can actually shift the experience of the signals from pain to pleasure. I do this all the time with cold showers. And often I'll be up in a forest sort of space, you know, even through winter, I've been doing this here in New Zealand, turning on the tap, wind will be blowing through. And because I consider myself, I think back to my ancestors, I think of like, oh, Vikings. And I think of, you know, someone stepping in and tearing the insulation of society off them. I really enjoy what could be quite uncomfortable, which is being naked in winter outside with a cold tap. but it's pleasurable because I respect the process I'm undergoing. I'm like, yeah, boy, do it. Look at you. And there's this aliveness that comes. I think physiologically, there's an immediate aliveness that comes because the cold water kind of activates your nervous system. And there's, you know, obviously famously Wim Hof and many other people doing cold water immersions. But beyond the physiological, the psychological relies on the identity of self. So I think this is a really key part. When you step into in endurance artwork, think of what you have reverence for. Think of what you're proud to be in the beautiful form of pride, not arrogant, but just majestically rising to meet something and having integrity. And that will turn, I believe, the signals from unpleasant to something which you can really relish. When we are receiving the signals in the moment, you can think of endurance art to be quite, to have a lot of punch, to be quite yang or harsh or hard. And sometimes they are. You know, you might do a work where you need to punch something continually, or, you know, Marina Abramovic, maybe she had the work where people could come and do things to her, you know, pierce her or hold a gun up to her face or scratch her and all. You know, it's quite hard. It's quite scary. But I really don't think that is the most important thing to focus on, just enduring big, big collisions. It's the subtle bodies is where you will make or break your ability to stay the course of your process. And these things can be trained in any moment, and they can be invoked through things like fasting is a great one. The cold showers I mentioned before. The good thing about cold showers, you can literally turn and on and off the process. With fasting, you've got to kind of stick at it for a couple of days to go through the whole thing. If you're going to fast, I'd recommend about 3 days minimum to really go through the full array. I'm not a medical practitioner, so obviously, you know, you've got to know your own bodies and you've got to know how to ease into and out of fasting. But that's my personal process, is it takes about 3 days for me to go through the full gamut of like, cool, I'm unplugging from my habitual. Oh, I'm going to eat. Oh, no, I can't eat. Oh, I'm going to have a drink. Oh, no, I can't drink. I'm going to, you know, you've got to get past that habit of attachment. Then you go on the second day into a physical like, oh, I didn't eat at all yesterday. Now we're doing this again. And then you start to get a bit of panic. I start to feel it coming up into my heart, literally like I've had coffee or something. It's like this anxiety. It's like, I mean, what the hell? And you just get emotional and you really want to go and do something, eat something, whatever it is. But then you pass through that. And the third day is beautiful. Or maybe third or fourth day. You come into the state of openness and release. And you come into, I believe, a greater attunement to these subtle energies that I was talking about, the subtle bodies. And when I try and link this, so a lot of my work is, and my knowledge is gained through experience. I am interested in neurobiology and physiology and all these sort of things, but I'm not qualified in that. I'm qualified more in ideas, I think. I've done a Bachelor of Communication Design, and I've been a game designer and a creative director and a poet. And that this is the kind of space that I feel like I've got any kind of credentials in. And the rest of my embodiment work is really just through direct experience. But I think that's a pretty good university to attend, the University of Life. And so when I feel into what really the magic source is that I bring, it's having direct dexterity around or engagement with the subtle shift. And it's almost hard to explain, but if I had to relate it to a medical science, I would look at referring to maybe the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, this fight or flight or rest and digest kind of difference. What's it like when we are activated and stressed? And then what's it like when we release? And in my body, it's almost like I really relate to this idea around the back of the head. And you can do this now if you want. Bring your hands to the back of your head, plugging your thumbs under the two descending parts of the skull, left and right. And just imagine all of the physical mass brought about through energy of ideas, all of the mental noise, all of that here, almost like a separate little gray cloud at the back of your head, not your brain, but just the energy. And in a second, we'll count down from five and we'll just soften our face and allow our heart to be soft and release our belly and imagine this cloud drifting up and away from the head and just see if you can sense a difference in your energy. So five, allowing the energy, the tension, four, three, get ready to release, two, one. and that starting to build a relationship with that simple process, and breath work is like, oh, such a blessing, such a direct, you know, pranayama. Thank you. It's such a great tool. I highly encourage getting to know that. But when you feel like you have some autonomy around your physiological response, going from the sympathetic stressed state, if you can actually just state shift, and I work with state versus story in open world theater, if you can just bring yourself into flow and harmony, that one skill is, I think, one of the key skills in endurance art, because you'll have different signals come in. You'll have tiredness, you'll have mental embarrassment, you'll have doubt, you'll have maybe emotionally you don't feel people are really supporting you, hot, cold, whatever it is. And each one of these, I believe, can be approached in the same way. Soften and receive, allow. And realize that your response is not bundled with the signal. Often it's like, oh, I'm angry, bah! It's like, it came in and I punch. No, but wait, what? Like, come in, let the anger hit you. And you choose if you punch or not. You can still punch, but it's not one and the same thing. The signal is not the reaction. And so if you can get the signal, and you go, oh, cool. It's not like if I'm hungry, something bad's going to happen if I don't eat in the next half hour. And I find Kundalini yoga really beautiful for that as well, because it's very repetitive. You just got to do it over and over and over, and your body gets to the point where it's like, I can't do this anymore. I've had that before, where it's like my arms are going to break. And then you go through to this euphoric state of like, I could do this forever, because something happens, is some kind of release. And that one process, yeah, I believe is the key to it all. So I'm going to do like a little demonstration here. Just a little bit of circus showmanship. I'm really inspired by people like David Blaine, who bring embodiment to magic. And I don't at all proclaim to be anywhere near as advanced as him. I mean, this what I'm about to do now would be more impressive if there was no mark left on my hand at all, because that's what he does with the piercing, you know, there's no blood and all that kind of stuff. But just as an example, so this is just a bit of wood, a bit of Palo Santo. Just gonna heat it up. And this is just simply to show the difference between a signal and a reaction. So hopefully you can see that. So we've got, so we can get some flame. There we go. So it's a light, yeah, it's a burning bit of wood. You can see the red glow. Cool. So it's hot. Now, and take this, and it's going to give me a signal because it's very hot. Yeah. So here's my hand. And as you said, I did flinch, there was like a reaction, and then just softening into it. And now it's like the worst part of it is gone. Cool. So just feeling this. And yeah, there was totally the buck. I didn't really manage to do it, but just feeling how there's a signal there. And then all you do is just soften in your heart. You allow the signal to run through you. And it's very similar to the cold water. As the cold water hits your head, it runs through your body. It's not that the cold water running through your body, it's the actual signal. And you allow your body to become attuned as like a soft channel through which that signal can pass. Same thing with the fire, with the heat. Oh, wow, that is amazing, I'm impressed. Other times when I do that, it's sort of had the skin peel away, but that time it didn't. Look at that. David Blaine, I'm coming for you. Yeah, great. Maybe it was because, I don't know, I'm doing it for you guys. It was like more absorbed. Maybe I absorbed the heat more, that's cool. But it's very similar to a cold shower, yeah? Like I felt the fire here, and it just diffuses just like the cold water through the body. But the reverence piece is really important. It's not just a physiological action. It's because this is my church. Like here talking to a camera and I don't even know who's watching, you know, we don't even have a big audience, but I fall in love with my audience because somehow I think it's the best way to connect to humanity. And I think a lot of other performance artists would understand what I mean. We don't bump up against all the idiosyncrasies and annoying things of personality. I haven't gotten irritated with you yet. I don't know you enough to have a grudge. So I just plug into the basic humanity. And I just want to do my best. I think we all have a gift. We want to come into the innocence of our heart and welcome each other out to play and say things can be better. And like, please stop cutting down the trees. Like, don't hit each other. You know, real simple kind of things. And I think that level of innocence can come through in this group setting. And the theater becomes the altar. And so that's why it's easy for me to do that, is because I really respect this space. And like in the very beginning of this, I talked about turning your space into your dojo. Every time I come into open world theater or to do these endurance artworks, it is the place in my life, save for, you know, I think emergencies, like, you know, your house is burning down. Obviously on the day of your death, that'll be a sacred and intense moment. Making love can summon a similar kind of sacredness in space. Birth of a child, you know what I'm talking about, like these sort of things. This and then theater, boom, is right there for me in the same space. And I believe that is how you'll be able to keep showing up and turning up. Now, what you choose to do with the endurance artwork, I think, is less important than the signature of it. And to me, what it means is that someone is stepping forward as an initiation, allowing themselves to mean less than the art, and to show that this thing that we protect with our lives, our identity, our physical comfort, et cetera, can be paused for a moment for something greater. It speaks to a really beautiful quality in humankind. So thank you for all the people who are stepping forward. And you are, by demonstrating, you're giving others permission to do the same. You are proving the false clamp, the yoke that we place on ourselves. You are shining a light on mediocrity. You're saying that, you know, complaining about the 9 to 5 or how tired we are, all these sort of things, they can actually be pushed to the side. And it doesn't have to be an unhealthy, exhausted, patriarchal, yang, you know, forced practice. It actually can be quite a yin, gentle, soft, opening, allowing practice. And I often believe a lot of the lethargy, the tiredness, the lack of focus comes because we are violating ourselves. We're not doing something we're passionate and interested about. We're not connected to what we have reverence for. And we are buying into our own excuses of why we need to be small. As soon as you start to shift out of that, I believe you have a lot of release, a lot of energy, a lot of love, a lot of play. The pain becomes pleasure, et cetera, et cetera. We come into this, we use the higher faculties of the human experience. And we're a conglomerate, I believe. I don't know what human beings are. Like, it looks like we're this finite thing, but really when you look at it with this number of systems, and as a game designer, I think of some things as modular, right? So you've got, for example, what have we got? We've got the brain. And even in the brain, you've got amygdala and neocortex and all that kind of stuff. And then that plugs in and those things, you've got the vagus nerve in the back of the face and that plugs down into your vital organs. You've got the, what they call the second brain, which is part of the gut. But even that can work separate to the vagus nerve, you know, like all of these things are their own little entities. So this is another really important piece. Oh, cool. We're getting comments. This is really lovely. And hopefully I can catch and chat with some of the comments later on. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we also have some questions here about, if you don't mind to interrupt.
Please. Yeah, I'd love to interrupt.
Really interesting questions, and I'm also curious, where do you get the inspiration to create all these scenarios, or how of this performance, but also of this limits, how do you not go through the limits, and where is inspiration?
Where is inspiration, and how, maybe we can clarify, how do I not go through the limits, or how do I go through the limits?
How do you know the limits, of where you're exploring, for example, like cold shower or doing this thing with the fire? How do you know where is time to stop, where is enough for this exploration, not to cross the line?
Sure. Really good question. OHS, occupational health and safety, really important. My experience is that there is an innate physical embodied wisdom that we very rarely use, apart from when we go through these thresholds. And you come into the state of, like I said, the thinking and the knowing is very different. I'm not thinking about the medical facts, or I'm not thinking about what my partner will think, or I'm not thinking about, oh, I hope they think I'm tough, and like all of the mental mechanics that would just be getting in the way. We come into this very soft, sentient, quite a shamanic mental space. And in that state, you know, you can listen to your body so much better. You know if it's going to start to do damage. And that is getting to know the subtle differences in the types of pain, because the signals are all very different. What's the difference between discomfort and actual damage? And also having a relationship with the body. Like I was talking about, you know, thinking of ourselves as a conglomerate. I think of my body as like a friend. It's like a steed, or it's like a in games, you call it a mount. You've got this like awesome camel or elephant that you ride, and it comes with you, and you sleep snuggled into it at night. And, you know, it's this soft animal of your body. I love my body. So this is the yin and the yang. It's like you push it hard, but then you rest it really well. Like if I feel like I need sleep, I will get sleep. You know, I will warm my body as well as being cold. I will eat things that are really good for me, or sometimes not good for me, but I really, like, I talk to my body. I talk to objects as well. It's a bit of animism, but it's like, I think when you have that kind of connection with your body, it'll push itself, because you take care of it as well. So it's like a horse that will go through the thorn bushes, because then, you know, you've built this relationship, and it'll push yourself there. So that's how I know, is just, I know, I feel, I'm in love, I expand my sense of life, because it's all about life, it's not about death. These things which are about reaching the threshold, I don't believe are morbid. It's not masochistic, it's not why I do it. It's for life, it's for love. When I trained doing breath work, that's what we used to say. It's like love leads to love, life leads to life. Across that threshold where it feels like, I'm not sure if you've done breath work and your body gets kind of tetany and it gets all like tight, across that threshold where your body becomes a coffin and it feels like you're going to die, you soften, you release, you surrender, you trust, and you just connect to so much more life and so much more love. So that's how I know. If I'm going for love, if I'm feeling more life, if I'm seeing a distinction between damage and discomfort, and now it's still just discomfort, then I keep going. If for a second I started to get damaged, yeah, I think I would stop. But that limit is really far. I can't even think. The only time that comes to mind was like probably 20 years ago, when I was doing flips off like this wharf thing and landing on the beach, and my leg did a really funny thing. And I was like, oh, that was some damage. Like, that was wrong. And I stopped straight away. You know, I'm plugged from the play, because I don't like that. It stops becoming fun when you're hurting your friend, your body. So that's my answer to that. As far as where the inspiration comes from, this is really important. Okay. Please, if you are locking yourself up in your mind and trying to get it right and perfect before you start taking action, please liberate yourself into doing. And I'd even be hard as to say you don't have a right not to create, because the activity brings clarity. Think like the creative process of doing is an extension of your mind. If your mind resolves the entire thing before it's even done, it's not taking into account the physics of interplay with the physical universe. And often we get let down because I think, oh, I imagine this whole painting, then I come to the canvas and I do it, and just the gravity and the water or the oil just shifts it differently, and I get disappointed. Because I'm thinking of them as two separate things. It's like my mental thing is complete and now the physical thing happens. But I don't believe that's how art works. I think they're interconnected. And all we have is the seed within us. And then the doing is an extension of the thinking process of your mind. And the mechanics of the paintbrush or the dance or your feet on the dance floor or the audience, that is actually a continuation of the planning itself. And so that's where the inspiration comes from, is just by doing. By starting. If you think of wavelengths as well and writer's block, how can I think of something really fluid and flighty and colorful if I'm physically like this? You know, get up and move, get up and dance. And that's where the inspiration comes from. A really practical example of this, which relates to endurance art, was when I was traveling across America. So I did this endurance art piece, which took almost a month. was to go from New York to Los Angeles and not use any money. I literally walked out of New York and I was there on the side of the road trying to hitchhike, and I was about a day in. That night, I think I'd slept in a laundromat and no one was picking me up the second day. And I called my partner at the time and I was like, this is not working. And then she said to me, it's because you're not at play. Like, your vibration is not matching the game. You're not an embodiment of that story, which you saw in the beginning, you know? The thing is, you have the inspiration, which sometimes is from a really high vibration. And then when you start to meet the physical world, and this is why endurance art is such a pivotal part of achieving things and having sustainability and continuing through the finish, is because when this world starts to engage with you, you have to soften, you have to breathe, you have to return to the seed moment. And then when I started to dance on the side of the road, I got picked up within 10 minutes, if that, probably less. And so if you're stuck, if you've got writer's block or creator's block, I would say try and approximate physically the feeling of the artwork. If you've got this mythic world, or you've got these characters, or this or that, like, become them, start playing, start moving. And then it's just a natural dialogue with yourself and your creative spirit that does. And then it will just leap from one to the next. And it might evolve and mutate to something completely differently. So that's the second part to that answer. And to wrap up my answer, I would say, I believe that because human beings are such meaning-making machines, we are dream weavers, we fall in love, we get intoxicated on the myth, and we are fed this myth both through our culture, you know, through our parents telling us about this, through watching media, and also through our own assumption and own self-projection. So there is this story that is taking place, and I think it sort of is not necessarily the physical actuality. And it's not necessarily like the modern day external thing, like, cool, we're doing this, we're inventing Tesla cars and we're going to go on the moon and all that kind of stuff. I don't even think that's what's really happening. Those are just kind of contemporary details. I think there's this mythopoetic existence of lineages passing through, and they're simultaneously practical and magic. And when you start to just take one detached step back and look at the interesting characters in this kind of like quite shamanic way we are telling our story, that is my inspiration. Because I go, well, we are telling a really amazing story right now. There's COVID, and then there was riots, and there's Black Lives Matter, and then there's, you know, climate change, and there's all these like archetypes coming, the billionaires are coming, and then there's Antifa, and then, like, it's really fascinating. And even within those, I'm seeing like this black hooded anonymous hacker character. Like, I know that character. I've seen it in, there's like Mr. Robot, and there's Assassin's Creed, and there's lots of like that characters dotted throughout our pop culture. And I'm like, I know that. It's like an ancient archetype that's coming through. And so that is kind of the space I look at. Like, I hear the words and I'm like, cool. I just polish it off. Those are details. What's the myth that's coming through? And that's what I try to surf through a lot of my artworks and remind people of that ancient way through my artwork as well.
Thank you. Really inspiring, and it is a really integral practice you are describing, like connecting to the space, to people, to something bigger. It's really inspiring on the different levels. And so if you wanted to continue this conversation with Atlas, you can join a Facebook group and share your comments on that. I think I will be reviewing this session once again to get, like, I did a lot of notes at the moment, like, I want to come back to them again. And for these purposes, you can also watch this recording 48 hours after for free. And if you want to have it for a lifetime, please go and see our library with another recordings. You can purchase that and make it available also for other people to see that in life. And thank you, Atlas. Really, really inspiring speech today and practices. And to wrap up the session, we have a question to all speakers of the conference. Like, what is your top embodiment tip? How to stay embodied? Can you say something?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to answer one question here from Beatrice as well. The link for my website can be put there.
Yes, we are.
And yeah, keen to continue that conversation outside in Facebook as well. So thank you for that. I'll be showing up for it. My key embodiment tip. I think it's just understanding the, and this links to endurance side as well, the ever presence of embodiment. It's not something that I think we can ever do just even in a morning practice or just when we go to the gym. It's understanding the unrelenting nature of our connection and responsibility with our body. So it's those micro practices, it's the Kaizen, it's the daily showing up. It's the monastic discipline of breath. And so hopefully that's a little bit of an abstract answer, but it's really just that continual relationship with our body in little ways is, I believe, the most effective way to live an embodied life. It's the subtle energies. It's that little gut instinct, like I actually don't want to eat that, or I don't want to engage in the sexual practice, or I shouldn't be here. These little ways, it's that little drip feeding. And that is the endurance side of life, is that we are always in a body until we die. And it's the privilege and the reverence of showing up to it in every moment that really makes a difference.
Wow. Thank you, Atlas.